on Annenberg Radio News.
You could tell there had been violence in that house. There was doors off hinges. There was holes in the wall.
One man describes the rescue of his ex-wife and son from a dangerous living situation. Good afternoon from the University of Southern California, and welcome to Annenberg Radio News for Thursday, April 7th, 2011. I'm Megan Dickey. Authorities have confirmed that a blast near a Santa Monica synagogue this morning was an accident. People who heard the explosion thought it was a pipe bomb. An object flew from the sidewalk and landed on a nearby house. Officials say it was a chemical accident and that a bursting pipe could have caused the explosion. No one was injured, but there was some damage to the synagogue and a nearby residence. 100 people were evacuated from a two-block radius. LA City officials again today asked anyone with information about the brutal beating at a Dodgers game last week to come forward. As Amanda Smith reports, their message was both stern and emotional.
The Giants fan, who was attacked by two unidentified men at the Dodger home opener, remains in a medically induced coma. And today, city officials want the suspects responsible to own up. Councilman Ed Reyes, whose district includes Dodger Stadium, had a stern message for the attackers.
The cowards that did this, I know you're listening. I know you're out there. You need to know, we will find you. We will track you down. You're better off turning yourself in.
The victim, Brian Stowe, suffered major head injuries. Doctors say he'll likely have brain damage. His family was there at the press conference but didn't speak. Mayor Villaraigosa offered his sympathies to them.
On behalf of virtually every single resident, and there are almost 4 million of them here in the city of Los Angeles, that we could say to the Stowe family that our hearts and our prayers are with you and your family in this very, very difficult time.
Villaraigosa also spoke on behalf of the family, who told him they know the attack doesn't reflect the Dodger spirit. But LAPD Chief Charlie Beck says things will be changing at Dodger games.
There's a homestand next week. If you go to that homestand, you're going to see a sea of blue, and it's not going to be Dodger blue. It's going to be LAPD blue. Public safety in this city is my responsibility, and I will make sure that I expend whatever resources necessary to keep fans safe at Dodger Stadium.
LAPD says they believe at least 100 people witnessed the assault. Currently, a reward stands for $100,000 for the suspects, and officials encourage those with information to call 1-877-LAPD. Amanda Smith, Annenberg Radio News.
Good news for Los Angeles. Today, the director of the Department of Health says mortality rates from heart disease and stroke have gone down. Smitha Bondade has more.
LA County experienced a huge milestone in the number one cause of death over the last decade. Director of the county's Public Health Department, Dr. Jonathan Fielding, says deaths from heart disease have gone down 41%. This means 9,000 fewer deaths annually from heart attacks. The number of deaths from strokes also went down by 2,000. Dr. Fielding says there are a few key reasons for the decline.
One is public education. Secondly, important advances in both medical and surgical treatment of cardiovascular disease, so that even when somebody has a disease, their risk of death from that disease has declined substantially.
But there is still more work to do.
We still have much higher rates of cardiovascular disease, both deaths from heart attacks and strokes, in African Americans.
The American Heart Association defines 7 ways of improving cardiovascular health.
They're get active, eat better, lose weight, stop smoking, control your cholesterol, manage your blood pressure, and reduce your blood sugar.
That was Shannon Lawrence from the Heart Association. He says everyone can adopt a healthier lifestyle and make healthy choices. Smitha Bondade, Annenberg Radio News.
The use of fossil fuels dropped in Los Angeles last year, but as Annenberg Radio's Melissa Butler reports, the city's controller isn't cheering.
The audit revealed that the DWP met their goal of 20% renewable energy. Yet, LA Controller Wendy Gruel, who headed the audit, says her team believes this had little to do with DWP's efforts.
My audit reveals, for example, that the DWP reached its first milestone as a result of higher than expected wind and hydro performance, abnormally cool temperatures, and sometimes things beyond the DWP's influence or control.
Ron Nichols is the DWP general manager. He used a basketball metaphor to claim that his team still won.
And we have an audit here, and pieces of that audit done by your consultants that kind of effectively says, well, we kind of think you stole the championship. You know, we kind of think maybe you made that half-court shot at the buzzer. Think maybe you might have committed a foul that you didn't get caught on, and you won. And maybe you didn't quite earn it. Well, I kind of beg to differ. I think we did win that division championship.
According to the audit, DWP would have fallen short of their goal by nearly 2% if temperatures were at expected levels. In the future, it's possible that the DWP will have to meet an even higher percentage of renewable energy.
Sitting on the governor's desk today is a piece of legislation that would make it very clear. It would be a requirement for all utilities, including the Department of Water and Power, that we would have to meet 33% by 2020.
But the push to meet an even higher green energy standard still depends on passing legislation and finding funding. Melissa Butler, Annenberg Radio News.
Tonight we'll have a chance of showers and thunderstorms after midnight. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy with a chance of showers, with highs in the mid-50s to lower 60s. And more of the same on Saturday, clouds and temperatures in the low 60s. Later on Annenberg Radio News, we'll hear about an upcoming festival for bikers and walkers. We continue our ongoing series on people and places in transition. A turning point comes from a crisis, a drastic change in someone's life, a fortunate turn of events. But for David Rowe, a resident at a homeless shelter in Los Angeles, it was a message from someone he once loved, someone who is in trouble. Christine Tring has more.
Back in 2003 in San Diego, David Rowe fell head over heels for Tammy Nelson. They got married, and David got the family he wanted. They had a child named Lestat. But just 2 years later, the marriage fell apart. Tammy left with Lestat, and David fell right back into an old habit, drug addiction. But after years of living on the streets, David walked through the doors at the Union Rescue Mission in Los Angeles when something told him to step off the bus.
You know, my life was totally unmanageable. I came here for help for me first, you know, but my ultimate goal was to try to get my family back together.
After some time, David quit using. He got a job as a cook at the Union Rescue Mission, where he prepared daily meals for people at the homeless shelter. His life slowly started coming back together, but he still thought about Tammy.
There was that void. I was blessed with getting a job. I was blessed with getting my life turned around. Everything was going great. I would say I'd go out on dates, but I was just never had that connection. And a couple of the dates I'd went on, some of the women had told me, until you get closure from the relationship you're in now, you'll never move forward. You know, and it started clicking that I really, truly did love Tammy.
One Friday night at the homeless shelter, David prayed for guidance. All weekend, he fasted. He hoped to get in contact with Tammy again. And then seemingly out of nowhere, a message arrived on Facebook. It was from Tammy.
So I clicked on it and it said, please respect and I'm married.
And then 4 hours after that, I felt bad because in my head, we didn't really have a marriage. Married a man who thought that I was his property and had my son think that that's how you treat women, that women are just property. As soon as you marry them, they own you, every part of you. You can't think for yourself, talk for yourself, do anything for yourself. You have to solely just serve him.
To me, I didn't care if she was married or not. I just wanted that reconnection. So I immediately sent her a message back, you know, and so it was like, well, this is something I have to do. I have to get closure.
I gotta say, David's the only person that has never hit me, yelled at me. And I told him that I was married, that Lestat's doing fine, and that I would really love to talk to him. And when he ever got back onto Facebook, to please let me know. And I remember not logging off that whole day and every hour checking, is David on? Is David on? And he, as soon as I checked, he said, hi, how are you? And it just, I started to cry because that's how he always greeted me.
At first, David thought reconnecting with his former wife would just provide closure. But before long, he realized Tammy was in trouble. He began to think about how he could get his family back. He prayed some more.
Every day on the phone, he would tell me that I could do it. Just not say anything. Just whatever he wants, just give it to him.
David said he was going to come and get her.
And I thought he was lying. Every day I called him a liar.
But by then, David knew exactly what he was going to do. He and his best friend, Dwight, piled into a white Explorer and headed east toward Albuquerque, New Mexico.
Dwight and I, we left at 5 o'clock at night on a Sunday night, and I didn't know what I was getting into. And so, and his thing was, don't worry about what you're getting into. Think about what you're gaining.
Called him and I said, where are you on Monday? When he said, I'm at McDonald's, I cried because I knew exactly where he was at. He was 2 minutes away at the McDonald's right down the street.
I saw her husband pull out and leave. And when we pulled up, it was like, you know, okay, here we go. You know, I immediately got out of the truck, walked up to the door, knocked on the door.
But my heart was beating so fast, I didn't hear anything. I just remember my son running out the door, and then he was standing there. Right in the doorway.
You could tell there had been violence in that house. There was doors off hinges. There was holes in the wall. All the windows were covered in blankets. The mirrors were covered. It was 18 degrees outside. But when I walked into that house, it felt colder than that.
I wasn't even cold. I was just wanting out.
And then when I looked over again and saw my son and saw the blackness around his eye, you know, and then looked at her and her eye was really black and swollen. It's just like, you know, wow, you know. And the first thing I said was, you know, thank you, God. Let me get him out of here. You know, and it took us less than 2 minutes. Had the truck loaded, you know, and we started on our way.
And he said, you're worth it. You do know that? I just looked at him, and then he said, you're beautiful. You know that? It was like everything that I was told for 5 years just flew out the window. And was flicked out with David's cigarette. And it was just like peace. It was just like, wow.
The boy was kind of excited because now he's on a road trip, you know, so my focus was more on him, keeping him, you know, happy and just showing him little things like a train. He'd never seen a train before, never seen mountains, you know, like we did, you know, and I started getting that little connection going with him.
What do you think the sentence is?
We cross the river on a raft.
Cross the river on a raft.
Good job.
Way to go.
I did it.
And how many times have we done this?
David, Tammy, and Lestat will move out of the Union Rescue Mission and get their own apartment within the next couple of months. David is still a chef at the mission, and Tammy hopes to put her culinary school degree to use. Lestat is getting used to Los Angeles, too. He enjoys reading and writing most and will soon be finished with the second grade. Christine Trang, Annenberg Radio News.
This Sunday, 7.5 miles of Los Angeles will become car-free. It's the city's second Ciclavia, an open-air festival for bikers and walkers. Emily Frost got the buzz on what to expect.
So, what should we expect from the second round of Ciclavia? The open streets event that transforms miles of LA into a car-free park.
Bikes and people and skateboarders and families.
Blacks and Asians and whites and Latinos, people in wheelchairs, every flavor of Los Angeles kind of all out in the street together.
Ciclavia organizer Joe Linton and Mayor Villaraigosa gave a preview of the event. The mayor's excitement for Sunday is palpable. After all, he's expecting his very famous bike friend, Lance Armstrong. Villaraigosa invited Armstrong to join when the superstar athlete texted him after the mayor fell off his bike in July. Armstrong wrote,
"Remember, stay on the bike."
Not only did the mayor stay on his bike, but he pushed to make the second Ciclovía happen.
LA is committed.
October's Ciclovía was a huge success in terms of numbers and safety, says board member Kyla Fullenwider.
We were hoping 30,000, 40,000, maybe 50,000.
They got 100,000, and they're expecting that many this time, too.
I think even the police department was amazed that it was such a peaceful event. You know, when you get 100,000 people on the streets, who knows?
Getting the first event up and running took a lot of grassroots organizing.
You know, we really started to feel momentum come into place after that first one, when everybody really saw what was possible.
Fundraising the $100,000 necessary to make the event real was a little easier for the organization this time, and the city matched that contribution. Participants can join in anywhere along the route, which spans from Boyle Heights through downtown and all the way to East Hollywood. Joe Linton's advice?
Just show up and experience spontaneous joy.
But Ciclovía organizers say the event is as much about fun as it is creating a robust movement to make LA a greener, healthier, and more civic-minded city. There are two more Ciclovías planned for 2011, after Sunday, and by October, the route will get longer. Time to tune up your bike, grab your sneakers, board, or rollerblades. Emily Frost, Annenberg Radio News.
Homeless youth in Los Angeles are wired, and that connection is making their lives safer. That's a finding by USC's School of Social Work, which received a $2 million grant to study social networking among this population. I spoke with Assistant Professor Eric Rice about how connectivity makes a difference.
Homeless youth are connecting with people outside of street life in ways that they never were before. So until about 4 or 5 years ago, when internet access and cell phone access started to become much easier for these young people, your life as a street youth basically revolved around other street youth who are just as resource poor as you are, or you have case managers. And case managers are these incredibly well-meaning people, but they're incredibly burdened. But now these young people are able to use internet resources and their cell phones in order to look for a whole bunch of other resources. And increasingly, they're relying on getting online on their phones, because homeless youth are also tend to have cell phones. So the research that I did in, I have some pilot data that I collected in 2009. A lot of these young people are able to get online with their mobile devices. So they'll have like an iTouch or a Sidekick or something like this. And even if their plan isn't working anymore, so long as it's Wi-Fi enabled, if they show up at Starbucks, they can get online. And that's what they're doing. Substance use and also sexual risk-taking is related to the ways that young people are using digital technology.
So are you finding that the homeless youth who are on social networking sites are more inclined or less inclined to partake in like risky sexual behavior?
Less inclined. So what's happening is that the young people who are using social networking sites to connect to best friends from home or family members that they still have good relationships with, so say someone who's like an aunt or an uncle or a brother or something like this, those young people are the ones that are doing well. They're using fewer drugs, they're engaging in less risky sex, in part because they have an anchor, emotional support, and even sometimes, you know, straight up financial support. So if I can help understand what's going on in their lives and what's working for them, then I can try to help agencies that serve these youth to deliver programs better, help develop newer programs that hit them right where they're at.
And so what kind of programs are you envisioning?
So one of the things that I'm envisioning is trying to understand better how it is that homeless youth are using social media and how it's impacting their sex lives, so that we can create programs that tap into the things that are working and that try to steer them away from the things that aren't.
That was USC Assistant Professor of Social Work, Eric Rice. Now we check in with Marie on Yellow to see what's coming up on Annenberg Television News at 6 p.m. on Trojan Vision. Hey, Marie, thanks for coming into the studio.
Tonight coming up on ATVN at 6 on Trojan Vision, we'll take you to the rallies for the Take Back the Night celebration going on campus, fighting against violence against women. Also, we're going to give everybody tips on earthquake safety, given the terrible earthquakes that happened today in Japan and Mexico. All that coming up tonight at 6 on ATVN.
Thank you so much, Marie. And that's it for this Thursday. We had help today from Laurel Galanter and Carl Nickenig. Christine Trang is our producer. The executive producer is Jessica Flores. And for all of us at Annenberg Radio News, I'm Megan Dickey.